On these retreats, we don't give report cards at the end of the retreat. You will not get performance assessment. You will not get the sack. So you are perfectly free just to learn just how to be at peace with yourself and just to develop the mind in a very sort of simple way. And of course, one of the things which people keep making mistakes is always, right, now I'm going to do it. Right, 6, 7, 8, 9 days, now I can get enlightened, now I can develop something, now I can do this. But if you notice, that's all looking off into the future, looking at what you're going to do next, instead of looking what's happening now. That some years ago, when I first, these are only reading glasses, I don't need them to walk around, but I keep them on my nose for the one reason that many years ago, I was going in from Bodhinyana Monastery into town for the Friday, for the weekend set of talks, and it was Amandus. He was my driver that day. And then halfway down Kingsby Drive, I thought, oh my goodness, I've forgotten something. I've forgotten my reading glasses. So I asked him, please stop, turn around and go back, because without the reading glasses, you know, you can't sort of do any of the business for our Buddhist society. And I looked in my bag, I couldn't find them in my bag. I looked at the shelf, I couldn't find them in the shelf. Looked in my pockets, they weren't there either. I must have left them back in my room. I looked everywhere for them. And then Mandus said, Ajahn Brahm, with deep respect, look on the end of your nose. Which is where they were. Here. And so, you know, from that time on, I said, well, they're going to stay up here, except when I'm in the shower or when I'm sleeping, because at least I know where they are. But it reminded me of the simile that why people look for peace when they go off to a nice, secluded location. They look for serenity once they've made enough money and can retire. They make for happiness once they get over their sicknesses, once their kids leave school, once they get to jhana grove, once they relax, then I can find some peace. Have you ever noticed, wherever you are, it's like looking for your glasses, and you forget to look on the one place where the glasses probably are, on the tip of your nose. Your peace, your happiness is right here, right now, on the tip of your nose. So you don't go looking anywhere else. Your job on this retreat is to look right here, where you are, in this moment, in this place, not what you're going to do next. So you don't aim for anything in the future. No goals. So, one of the favorite stories about goals is the story of the old monks don't lie. If you've been to my retreats before, you'd have heard that story before, but it's one of my favorites. Old monks don't lie. So, many centuries ago, there was a monk wandering from place to place on, you know, what we call the, well, that's to call it Charika, or in Thailand, Tudong. And just wherever you got to at night time, there you would rest. But this particular monk is old, and just before the rains retreat was about to start, he came to the very poor, simple hut of a farmer. And the farmer and his wife were both devoted Buddhists. So they're very happy to give him his meal of the day on alms round. But after giving the monk, filling his alms bowl with some food, they then said to this monk, "Venerable sir, have you got a place to stay for the rains retreats?" And he happened to say, "No." And the man, the farmer, just bowed down and put his hand up and said, "Please, venerable sir, please stay with us. Not far from here is a beautiful serene meadow next to the river. I can very easily build you a very simple hut, which is all that really a monk needs. The monk does not need a TV room, a kid's room, a sunroom. All he needs is a simple room just to lay down and just to rest at night and to meditate during the day. It's very simple. And I'm very happy to feed you every day. And all I would ask in return is maybe just every now and again I'll ask some questions on meditation, maybe to teach my two little children something. But that's all I'd ask. You'd have almost perfect solitude." And the monk said, "Yes, okay." So the farmer built the old monk a nice little hut, and he would feed the monk every day, you know, simple food, not much. And that was enough for the old monk. And the monk would actually teach them about some meditation, teach the kids some nice stories. And just even the whole family just got to love the wisdom and the kindness of this monk. Even the family dog would always look forward to seeing the monk coming every morning. And after a few weeks, the monk came and said, "The end of the rains retreat is tomorrow. This will be the last day I'm coming to your hut. I will have to go off on my wanderings, not being attached to any place." And when he said that, oh, the farmer was shocked. The wife was devastated. The two kids started wailing and crying. And even the dog started whining. Whoa! That is how do dogs whine? Oh. But anyway, they were really upset because they got very attached to this old monk. And so the old monk said, "But you have been really kind to me. You have fed me and looked after me and gave me so much time for my meditation." And in fact, he said, "During my meditation, I had some very powerful experiences. And one of which I discovered through my meditation that not far from here, closer than you think, there's a huge buried treasure. Enough so you don't need to work so hard in the fields. So your kids can go to a good school. So even your dog can have good food every day." And even the dog understood that and lifted up his head. "Woof, woof, I'm interested." But he said, "You have to follow my instructions perfectly, with no mistake." So they're all listening. Even the dog, you know, the dog's ears pick up and said what the instructions were. He said, tomorrow morning you have to be standing at the doorway of your simple hut and wait for the sun to rise above the horizon. Pick up your bow and arrow, point it at the rising sun, and just at the point where the disk of the sun separates from the horizon, I want you to..." This wouldn't work in Singapore because you never see the horizon because the sun always gets a bit too dusty. Is that the case these days? Many buildings, okay. But this was the old days. And anyway, that there, when the sun rises, the disk separates, then let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find a great buried treasure. enough that you'll be happy for the rest of your lives. And so, he was excited. And then the monk left. So the following morning, he was up really early, much earlier than needed, so excited. Today he was going to be rich. He knew he would find that treasure. Why? Because old monks don't lie. And so, he stood there, and eventually the sun started to come up. He took up his bow and arrow. He faced the rising sun. He pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun, and just as the sun separated from the horizon, he shot the arrow and it flew a long distance. And he ran after it with his wife, the two kids, and the dog. And where the arrow landed, went a long way, they dug a hole. The wife had to dig. Well, this is what happens, guys, when you make your wife do all the work. She dug, and what did she find?
Nothing.
Only suffering. Okay, yeah, trouble, suffering. Suffering will do. Dug, only found suffering. But real suffering, because this fellow came walking by and said, "What do you think you are doing?" He said, "That is not your land. That is my land. And I happen to be a top lawyer. I am going to sue you. I don't care what you have got, what you haven't got. Your farm, your land, even the clothes on your back, even the little collar around the dog. I'm going to sue you for everything. But you can't do this. It's illegal, destroying other people's property." And wife said, "It's not my fault. My husband told me to do it." And the husband said, "No, it's not my fault. This old monk said, we'll find a great treasure here." And those two words, old monk and treasure, the lawyer was very interested. He said, "What do you mean?" "Because I'm a Buddhist," said the lawyer, "and old monks don't lie. What did he tell you?" And when the lawyer heard the instructions, he said, "Oh, it's obvious your mistake. You know, look at you, you're so thin. You probably haven't got much education. You need to be a lawyer to do these things." So he said, "I'll do a deal with you. That tomorrow morning I will shoot that arrow, and I'm sure we'll find the treasure because old monks don't lie. But," he said, "we'll split up the proceeds 51%, 49%, less my costs." And he drew up a contract and made the guy sign it. Sorry, any lawyers here. Totally stereotyping lawyers. But anyway, so the problem was the lawyer was there. And who knows, he's bigger, a bit stronger. So the lawyer shot the arrow. Now waited for the rising sun, pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun, shot the bow and arrow, and it went much further. And they all ran after it. The old monk wasn't there. It was the lawyer, the farmer, the wife, the two children and the dog. They all ran after it. And where it landed, they dug another hole. This time the farmer's job to dig the hole. He dug. And what did he find? Only suffering. More suffering this time. Because this time it landed in a field belonging to a general in the army. And the general was very powerful. He said, "What are you doing? You can't destroy my property." He said, "And I don't care if you're a lawyer or a farmer, whatever. Soldiers, cut off their heads right here, including the dog." He's an accomplice. He's caught on the scene of the crime. But the lawyer said, no. The farmer digging. No, the lawyer ordered me to do this. And the lawyer said, no. It was this old monk said we'd find a treasure there. And the general said, "Put your swords away, soldiers. Old monk, because I'm a Buddhist too. Now don't ask me how come a general who cuts people's heads off is a Buddhist." Those are just incidental details. But he said, what did the old monk say? Because old monks don't lie. And then when the general heard the instructions, "Ah, look, it's obvious. Lord, you should be more intelligent than this. What does a lawyer or a farmer know about shooting bows and arrows? You have to be a trained archer. Now, that's my profession. I train almost every day archery. I will shoot it, the arrow, tomorrow, said the general. And we'll split the treasure three ways. I'm sure we'll find the treasure tomorrow. So the following morning, it was the general with the bow and arrow. He stood at the doorway of the house. He waited for the sun to rise. And as the sun rose above the horizon, just when it separated, he shot that arrow. That went a huge distance. And they all ran after it. You know, the general and the lawyer, who was puffing by the time he was even halfway, and the farmer and his wife and the two children, and of course, the dog, don't forget. I say the same thing every time I tell the story. But then, where the arrow landed, this time, he got the lawyer to dig the hole. And the lawyer dug, and, no, it's the general to dig the hole. The general dug and dug and dug. Really a deep hole this time. And what did he find? Nothing, only big suffering this time. Immense trouble. Because this time, the arrow landed in a field, actually not a field, in a garden, belonging to His Majesty the King. This was destroying royal property. And so the royal guards arrested all of them, including the dog, and presented them all before His Majesty the King. And His Majesty, when he heard what they had done, he said, is that true? Is that what you did? He said, yes. And the Majesty turned to the general. Of all people, I would have thought that you would have understood the consequences of your actions. You know the law. Your greed for treasure just overcame your understanding of the danger and inappropriate action of destroying a royal garden. I have no choice, said His Majesty the King, but to execute all of you, including the dog. And at that, the dog was whining, the two children were crying, the wife was wailing, the husband was trembling, the lawyer was trying to figure out how to lodge an appeal in time, and even the general was just so ashamed of himself. But then the sort of general said, but we were told by an old monk we'd find a treasure there. And the king said, did you say old monk? Yeah. Because I'm a Buddhist too, said His Majesty. And you know, old monks don't lie. What did he tell you? And when the farmer told what the instructions were, the king said, this is really strange. You know, I can't see where you went wrong. So, he said, I'm going to suspend your sentence, to hold it back for a few weeks, or for a few days, however long it takes. I want to find that monk, and find out what he really meant, and why he's got you all into such trouble. So he put them all in jail, looked after them. Even the dog had a nice little cell, with very nice royal food. They looked after the dogs. Especially just, you know, your last meal before you die, they always look after you. So, there he was. The king sent out his troops to try and find that monk. It wasn't that hard to find. Brought him back to the palace, and in front of everybody he said to the old monk, he said, you've got these people into a lot of trouble. You promised if they followed the instructions they'd find a great treasure. You know, just notice sometimes that's what the Buddha says, if you follow the teachings, follow the Eightfold Path, in no long time you become fully enlightened. Have you? Old monks don't lie. Especially the Buddha. So, he said, why have you got these people into so much trouble? And the venerable old monk said, because they didn't follow my instructions. What do you mean, said the king? Your Majesty, I'll show you tomorrow. You accompany these people, including the dog, to the house tomorrow morning. I would invite you to follow the instructions. And I will guarantee you will find an enormous treasure. But, he said, out of compassion for these other people, I would ask you to divide the treasure into four equal portions. One for the farm and his family, including the dog. One for the lawyer, one for the general, and one for yourself. And that way that I'm sure that even your portion will be more than satisfying, you know, for you. Imagine how much that would mean to a poor farmer. So the king agreed. And the following morning, they were all there. The king, the general, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children. I never asked you that. But anyway, the dog was there too. And then, as the sun started to rise, the king stood in the doorway. And he turned around to the venerable old monk. And the old monk said, "Correct, Your Majesty." And as the sun began to rise above the horizon, His Majesty the King picked up the bow and arrow and turned around to the old monk. And the old monk, "Correct, Your Majesty." And just before the sun was about to separate from the horizon, he put the arrow and pulled the string back and was about to shoot. And he turned to the old monk, and the old monk said, "Wrong, Your Majesty. I never said, shoot the arrow. I said, let it fly." And the king thought for a few moments. He was very smart, very wise. So he was holding the arrow between his thumb and forefinger. He opened the thumb and forefinger and let it fly. Straight down. Right between his feet. Where he was standing. And there they dug a small hole. And what did they find? Great treasure. Which they divided four ways. The king could actually lower taxes as a result of that big boost to his finances. And the farmer never needed to till the fields again. I think he turned his little farm to a resort. The dog ate the best, choicest of food out of golden platter, and he had a nice dog kennel with air conditioning, which one wolf for cool, two wolves for warm it up. So the meaning of that story, the old monk said before they all got their share, he said, now that's the same with meditation, with Dhamma. Sometimes we don't follow the instructions. We look for the treasure over there, tomorrow, this afternoon, after I've had a bit of exercise. Once I get to see limiters, once I get to see amazing things inside the mind, once my mind is still, then I'll get the treasure. Do you see your mistake? So, let go of the arrow of craving, of wanting. And where does it fall? Right where you're sitting. Right in this old, aching body and mind. Jet-lagged, tired, fed up, sleepy, whatever it is. Right here, that is where you find the treasure. Right here, right now. And that is so true. You know why that's true? Because I've just told you it. And I am officially an old monk. Old monks don't lie. That's a nice little story just to get you going. But it's true. What we really do in our meditation is come into this present moment. Stay here. Don't go off into the next. Don't linger in the past. You know, what teacher told you this, what who said that to you, what happened a few minutes ago. All of that, just let it go. And don't still go thinking into the future. Right now, what should I do? Should I watch the breath? Should I do vipassana? Should I do metta? Should I do this? Should I do that? That's all thinking in the future. What are you doing now? Where are you? Let the arrow of craving stop here. And then you'll find great treasures. So, I did promise yesterday, last night, that I would do a little guided meditation so you can actually understand what we're talking about. Put it into practice. So, if you'd like to close your eyes, 15 minutes, roughly. Close your eyes. Where are you? With your eyes closed, sometimes you could be in Singapore, you could be on an aircraft, you could be in Indonesia, you could be in Austria, you could be anywhere with your eyes closed. But one thing you can be certain of is you're here, in this moment, in this body. And in this body, we don't worry about where we came from. These days people come from so many different realms, so many different countries, different religions, different situations. It doesn't matter where you come from, now you're here. And also, your future, which we spend way too much time worrying over, is being made right now. This is the only time that you can do anything about your future. This moment now is where your future is being made. So if you really care about your future, don't think about it. Be in this moment, the place where your future is being constructed. And in this moment, in order for you to be in this moment and not get carried away with old habits, you can start with being aware of your body. What does your feet feel like in this moment? Can you be aware of the feelings in your feet? You don't need to give them a name. Hot, cold, comfortable, whatever, it doesn't matter. But you can feel them. If you don't know how your feet are, you can just wiggle toes, just move them, just to get some contact between your mind and your feet. And once you have some degree of awareness of your feet, just see how that feeling, sensation, changes. It doesn't always stay the same. It can sometimes just get more tingly or more relaxed or more tight or more achy. You get to know those feelings. And in particular, see what you need to do to get the feelings in your own feet a little bit more comfortable. Even if it means just adjusting your posture, if it means if you're sitting on a chair, moving your feet out or moving them in, moving them apart, until you find the optimum position for your feet. Once your feet are reasonably comfortable, move your awareness up to your calves, even including the knee to the lower legs. How do they feel? Can you notice any sensation there at all? And once you've noticed that sensation, see if you can notice it changing. Sometimes it throbs with the pulse of your blood throbbing through your system. Sometimes you can feel it sort of ache. Sometimes get less, sometimes get more. And see if you can make a connection. When it relaxes and becomes less of a problem, why? If it gets tighter, more ache, why? Especially in your knees, because many people have big problems with their knees because they don't really pay enough attention to them. How do your knees feel? After a while, just looking at something like your knees, you can just relax them. How do you do that? Well, first of all, you notice any tension there. Then you notice the tension get worse, the tension get less. You're learning from feedback how to relax. Then you move up to your thighs. Feel the heaviness, tightness maybe. And once you have awareness, mindfulness, a connection, you can feel those muscles, then you can relax them, suggest them, relax to the max. And see if your awareness, your mindfulness, giving you feedback, giving you a response, to see if your muscles do get more relaxed. The more you develop your awareness, the more likely it is that you get your feedback and that you learn what relaxes your muscles and what makes them tight and tense. Then moving up to your butt, and pressed against a cushion or a stool or a chair. I always thought there's no way that you can relax your own butt. Well, I just notice it sitting here. Feel the tightness, the pressure. And I find a little bit of kindness. You can relax. Maybe auto-suggestion, but it certainly works. Then you move your attention up to your waist. Now you're getting some interesting parts of your body, because not just the waist, but inside there, there's so many organs, the colon. Many people have digestive problems, have irritable bowel syndrome, all sorts of other stuff. So you experience the feelings there. You have like spinal problems, feel the spine there. Any ache or pain, can you feel that? Any sort of like heaviness or tightness or achiness. Once you are aware of it, you can feel it, then just see what makes it change. How irritable bowel becomes more irritable, more painful, more tight. What makes it relax and get less of a problem? You can feel it loosen up. It's like when I was had food poisoning. Imagine that bowel, imagine it just relaxing, soothing, opening out, calming down. You can feel that happening. And sometimes irritations or pains, after a while you can relax them all. If you're getting to a place in your body which is a problem for you, just stay there. Others can actually move up to area below your chest, above your waist. Many, many different organs there. Your lungs and stomach, livers, kidneys, whatever. But it doesn't matter what they are, but can't you feel anything there? An irritation, an ache, a discomfort. If you can, just focus with it and just be kind. Open the door of your heart to that feeling. Being a friend to it, soothing it. See if that lessens the intensity of the irritation. If it does, carry on. If it gets worse, then try something else. Little by little we learn from trial and error and the feedback which mindfulness gives us, what makes it better and what makes it worse. We go up to our chest. How does that feel? Again, I always do this because you really want to help and assist people. So many people get breast cancers. They get heart disease. But sometimes we feel we're just a victim. But you can take some, say, control over that disease and how it's rehabilitation. Feel it. Feel there's something which is not quite balanced there. Give it kindness. Any sort of pain in that part of the back, any tightness in the chest, whatever. Feel it and relax it. And if it's going in the right direction, you can feel that things are healing and soothing. You're helping the body do its stuff. Feel this beautiful kindness and energy and peace and healing. can feel that because you're aware. Your mind is not distracted somewhere else. Then you go up to your shoulders. I like to imagine shoulders like a bunch of strings which are being pulled apart. It's called stress. And I imagine these bunch of strings on either side of my spine called shoulder muscles, letting go of both ends. And I can feel the muscles follow. They relax too, get nice and loose. You can look at my arms and hands. Making sure I don't forget those are okay down there. If I need to move them, move them. Till I find the optimum position for them. Try this, that was better the way it was before. Try something else, that's even better. I'm going to go for that. Trial and error with mindfulness till you get the best position. And I go up to my neck. Making sure that is nice and sort of relaxed. Because I do suffer from hay fever every now and again, this year has been a good year so far, but you get irritations in the throat. So if you've got an irritation in the throat somewhere, just focus on it. And relax it. Whatever it is needed to release the tension, to soothe the irritation, to make it less of a difficulty. Always in this moment, a lot of time with kindness. This is where the treasure lies, right here. And lastly, I go to my face. As they say, the emotions of a human being can be read on their face. That the tightness of tension around the eyes and the mouth, that tells so much of the suffering going on inside. So I'm aware of the muscles around my eyes, forehead, and mouth. I relax them all. Open them out. And I can feel from the feedback of mindfulness what relaxes. Or what tightens things up. As you learn how to relax your own face, then sometimes I go 2 inches behind my eyes in roughly the center of my brain, even though you aren't supposed to be able to feel any sensations there. I imagine sensations. The tiredness, the tension in my own brain. And I relax it. Thought so much, now I can just relax all thinking. Made it work so hard just to get here. Now I'm just going to give it a break. Okay, brain. Take a break. Take 5. And I imagine my brain relaxing. And then I imagine my whole body's just as a one unit rather than in parts, sitting here. I've relaxed every part of it, one by one, methodically. Now look at it as one unit, and it feels just so nice. It's what I mentioned last night of the pleasure of relaxation. I even smile to myself as I enjoy the delight of a relaxed body. And I notice that delight takes relaxation to a deeper level. become more relaxed. And the whole time the body's been in this moment, being focused, not been wandering anywhere, just been here, developing mindfulness and kindness. Just enjoy that for another minute. You can open your eyes, unfortunately. So that gives a little taste of how we start our meditation by getting our body nice and relaxed and comfortable. When the Buddha taught, the first thing he taught was the middle way to avoiding extremes, especially things which tire and wear out your body. Which is one of the reasons, you know, the Buddha just, you know, he had a good rest, good shower, found a nice place to meditate. Just this beautiful meadow by the river, not like these days, but in the old days. I went to, when I was 1972, I went on first pilgrimage, trying to find Bodh Gaya, found Bodh Gaya. There was no one there. It was just so different than these days. It was, you know, I just had to get a rickshaw, hire it from Gaya, and just go there for the day, tell them to wait for me. Because there's no other transport. Couldn't stay there. Oh, well, they could, but I didn't know the temples where you could. But anyway, I always imagined what it would have been like in the time of the Buddha, just a very secluded meadow by the river, and just found a nice tree to sit underneath. But have you ever seen like a Bodhi tree or a fig tree? Imagine sitting at the root of that tree. It has so many knobbly roots. Your butt will be sore in 10 minutes. So of course he didn't just sit on the roots, allowing them to dig into his flesh. Everyone, the story was, he just went and got some grass from a grass cutter. The first Zafu meditation cushion made of grass. Put it there so it's really nice and soft and comfortable. Of course these days we've got all sorts of different types of meditation cushions. We have, you always see that people start with just one meditation cushion, but by the end of the meditation retreat you've got two or three, one here, one sitting against. But why not? If it makes you comfortable, fine. But I always fantasize about designer meditation cushions. You know where I got that idea from? I haven't seen him for a while. He was that artist over in Singapore. You know, he actually came to a couple of events. He did some designing of dresses for Princess Diana or something. Remember him? I don't know, but anyway, he said that what he was going to do was to do designer Zimmer frames. You know Zimmer frames? But designer Zimmer frames. Because, you know, he's a very smart businessman. He said, first of all, you know, that people, you know, when you get a bit old, you do need a Zimmer frame to walk around. And usually, the elderly people are usually quite rich. He said, you can get designer Zimmer frames for the rich and the wealthy. I don't know if he ever made any money out of that, but it was a good idea at the time. Anyway, he was saying the designer stuff. But, you know, things which are practical, your cushion. Is your cushion just soft enough? Is it high enough? Is it cool enough? Imagine that you could have one of these remote controls on your cushion. The cushion has about 5 or 6 different compartments. Okay? And so if it's just the right knee is a bit sore, needs to be lifted up, you press a button, it lifts up. As that part of the cushion inflates. If the bottom is actually just needs to be lifted up, one for the bottom there inflates. And if it's too cold, you know, in the room, you can actually have it warmed up like those cars which you see in Japan, you know, which can actually warm up your bottom in the cold weather. If you have sloth and torpor is getting you asleep, you can have like a pulse of electricity every minute to wake you up. Or even better, press another button. You know, one for latte, one for cappuccino, one for short black. So you can have that right where you sit. Design a meditation cushion. It's a big business. Hasn't got there yet. Crikey, come on, use the innovation. Yeah, Singapore, come on. Be a hub of meditation technology. But anyway, the whole point is get yourself physically comfortable. And then, but you can only get yourself comfortable so much by external stuff. The rest is like letting go of the tension in your body. Relaxing it. Oh, that feels really good. It feels good. That's an important part of meditation, the delight and the pleasure of meditation. Because otherwise, many of you come here, this is your holiday time. Sometimes you have to beg and grovel to your boss. Please, can I go on a retreat? No, you can't, we're too busy. No, please. No, we're too busy. But you're here. And when you go back, they say, oh, where did you go on your holiday? Oh, I went to Australia. Oh, did you see the opera house? Did you go Margaret River and try the wines? No, of course you're Buddhist. You try the chocolates. Do you go swimming with the sharks? Or did you? And he said, what? You spent your, what do you do for your holiday? Well, I just sat in a room and sat all day and just, only just ate a couple of fruit, no TV, no. You didn't go traveling, you didn't go shopping? No, no shopping. Wow, what do you go on holiday like that for? But you look so much happier. So there's something here that when you realize just how happiness is an important part of the meditation, then one understands that when the happiness comes, even in the body, you enjoy the peace of the body, how relaxing it is. And so you learn how to relax and not destroy it. And later on, your mind gets very delightful. When it gets relaxed, the body relaxes, it feels so good. The mind relaxes, it feels even more pleasurable. And that is what's coming next. Now, before we finish off, there's one part of this which I always like to emphasize. What we did there was a 20-minute guided meditation. Because it was a guided meditation, it was easy for you to follow. You didn't need to do anything, because I was doing all the work. Have you ever noticed when it's a guided meditation, the teacher's actually teaching you, it's just so easy to relax and become peaceful. But you do it by yourself. Many of you, you know all the stories, you've been here many times, you know what to do. And say, okay, now, what am I supposed to do? Oh yes, just sweep your meditation, be aware of the feet, be aware of the be aware of my calves. Oh yes, I've got to remember to check the email about sort of my boss, because I remember he's got very strong calves and he might kick me if I don't get this done. And you just wander off on just, you're making connections, all weird connections. which have nothing to do with meditation. But when you have a guided meditation, it's amazing just how you keep on track. So what we encourage, even if that worked for you, or if you have other guided meditations which work for you, you put them on your iPhones or your whatever device you have. Of course, the best device to load them up on is your brain. But people's brains aren't as good these days as artificial technology. So anyway, you load them on your iPhone or whatever, your tablet, and so when you want to do some meditation, you put the earbuds in, you turn it on, and you got some of your favorite monk or nun right with you, any time. You close your eyes and you go there. Old monks don't lie. Too bad, Bruce. All those things you've heard many times, but it's like it's right there for you, guiding you through a meditation. And you keep doing that until you are thoroughly brainwashed, and then you do it by yourself. So that's actually the training. Because you can't have monks and nuns with you, sitting next to you in the car as you go to work, with you in your rooms, in your office, all over the place. But you can, in the sense of if you download them. So, if you're doing the first few days here, if you have your favorite talks, put them on your iPhone, listen to them, and that will help you. If you want to go deeper, you do that for the first day, 20 minutes, and then when it finishes, you just carry on. You've got the momentum, you're going in the right direction, and who knows, that may take you into deeper meditation later on. So that is the start. Now this, of course, is so much more about meditation, and I'm going to be telling you all the other interesting deep things which are going to happen next. But so far, enough for now. Da da da. Sadhu. Sadhu. Big one. Sadhu. Very good. Okay, so now it's free time until your lunch. And so you can do walking meditation, sitting meditation, whatever you want to do, lying meditation. You can dream about meditation. Whatever. So be kind to yourself. Don't force yourself. That's what you do every day. So for the first two or three days here, you've got free permission to go into your room and make the best use of your bed. I do that because people feel guilty these days. Oh, no, I can't do that. Of course you can. Because sometimes that's what you need more than anything else. And lunch is at 11 o'clock. Now, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, isn't it? We have 4 o'clock, we have a little Sutta class. You can come if you wish, you don't have to come. It's just they're going through some of the original teachings of the Buddha. And in the evening, the question and answer time. So all those questions which you have been really sort of burning to ask, you know, stuff about meditation or being a monk. So there you can put them on pieces of paper between, and was it 8 to 9 o'clock? And then we can answer those questions. Tougher the better. Really tough, I'll give to the nun. Hey, make her work. It's got to be equity. Fairness. I work, you work. That's that thing of the free lunch. No, anyway, so we'll see what we do. Okay, very good.